last meeting, to research employers that applied for the honor roll. So if we have, rather than asking maybe a specific question about compliance with a TOSHA penalty or law or violation, whether it was health or otherwise, she said she could research those for us on an individual basis unless it became too numerous. So we would really love it to be too numerous and have many, many employers apply for the honor roll. But I think at this point, I appreciate that she offered to do that for us so we can research that information internally. And also internally, we also talked about the Bureau maybe investigating internally some penalty issues so that we don't necessarily have to list that in the language on the web page on the toolkit for the honor roll. And we were going to initially have a question on the application that I sent you all that asked about insurance, but that's something we can also, for ease of administration, leave off the application, and we can research that internally. So I think that's going to maybe help with some of those things. Yes, and Dr. Curte said, I should probably have said that all six of the things I do are involved with workplace mental health and return to work, and we appreciate that perspective. Thank you very much. Okay, so with that, let's get started in talking about the language. I sent you all a draft, and we edited it several times before I sent it to you. Internally, we looked at it based on our conversation in January. We did go back and do some revisions to the toolkit language and re-revised it again a couple of times. So it's still in draft form. It may change again, but with that, I would like to share my screen, if that's all right with everyone, and bring that up so that we can all look at that together and see what questions you all might have or suggestions at this point for that. That up. Apologies here. Okay, can you all see that?
Yeah, zoom in if you could a little bit. Yep. That would help.
Zoom in a little bit. Okay, Kyle.
Bottom right corner is a plus button.
All right, thank you. Whoop, that's a little too much, isn't
Thanks.
It? Okay, so that's better. Okay. So the first part, I think, seems pretty straightforward. We were just going to say has been in effect. That was part of our conversation the last time, was that we wanted to know it, that not just that you're developing it, but that you've already developed it and that you already have a return to work policy and that you've communicated the policy, the employers have communicated that, and that they have a designated return to work coordinator as defined in the toolkit. So in this section, does anyone have any comments or suggestions or thoughts on that section? Welcome, Michelle. Thank you for joining us today. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Michelle Weiss. Do you need me to say anything about myself? Or
yes, we have a couple more people at the meeting today than we had in January, and I thought it would be nice to just say a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thanks. And sorry, I'm by phone. I tried to connect by Teams, and for some reason, it just wasn't working. So I went to the old school method and just did the dial in.
That's okay.
I've been working in Tennessee.
I had the same problem, Michelle.
Oh, okay. It was really weird. So I kept trying, and then I thought, well, okay, this is the last and final attempt. So anyway. No, I'm Michelle Weiss. I've been working in the field of vocational rehabilitation, oh goodness, since 1991. I've been in Tennessee since 1995. I used to work for a company that did a lot of return to work programs and also case management and vocational rehabilitation. I have been working with my own company since 2005 and still do a lot of consulting both with employers and also doing a lot of forensic vocational rehabilitation work, how I'm determining how employable people are to help in the Bureau of Work Comp cases with how employable people are after an injury.
Thank you. And Michelle and Shirley also make a presentation in the Return to Work Coordinator program that Brian developed and he presents. So we appreciate that. And Michelle, the only thing... The only thing that you missed really is that we were looking at some of the language. This is the revised language that I'm sharing, and you can't see it because you're on the phone. So if you can look at, if you and Shirley can look at the copies that I sent out for the revised language for the toolkit for the honor roll employers, I'm just looking at the first section right now that states you have a return to work program that has been in effect for 12 months and includes a written return to work policy, communication of the program to all current employees, and a designated return to work coordinator as defined in the Bureau's Reward Program Toolkit. Does anyone have thoughts or suggestions on that section?
It'd be really nice if some of the employers would talk about whether they thought that that was something that was too burdensome or most employers would understand and be able to comply with. What are the employers' thoughts?
Me personally, I don't think it's anything too burdensome. You know, here at Nucor, we've already had a policy for a long time, so.
Yeah, I think that's very doable. I don't see that being too much of a burden.
I do have a question based on communication of the program to all current employees. So, what exactly does that entail? I mean, could, if you have policies that are available to all associates, if they just, you know where to look, it's posted, or is this something that's like an annual communication? Is there any guidelines around what that communication of the program to all current employees means?
That's a great question, Diane. Thanks for raising that. So in the program that Brian hosts for employers who attend the Return to Work Coordinator, that's one thing they talk about. And one of the things we propose in that is that the Return to Work policy is shared with all employees, and it may even become a part of the onboarding and orientation process for employees. And Brian, do you have anything else to add on that?
I think what Shirley was saying, part of an annual communication policy, I think that obviously the onboarding, but some type of reminder, whether it be part of the company-wide newsletter, some type of company communication, especially communicating some of the stakeholders some of the success stories within the return to work program that the employer has, and helping people understand that it, having the staff understand that it exists, I think are key components of what we would hold out to be an exemplary employer or an honor roll employer. So I think that Shirley's got a really good point here, in that we need to maybe spell this out a little bit more, maybe ask a couple of questions on the application to get a better understanding of what their communication program looks like. Thank you, Shirley. That's some good points.
Sorry. Yes, sorry, Shirley. I think I said Diane, but thank you. So, maybe yes,
I think it was Diane.
Sorry, Diane.
It was Diane.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you for clarifying on that.
So, Brian, you're proposing that maybe, and that's a good point, because if someone on our committee has questions about it, then employers will have questions about that too, possibly. So maybe we add a question to the application as to how that communication took place.
Yeah, I think that's what Diane was saying. I think that's a key component. Maybe we could put like some bullet list there, maybe check the box type of scenario, come up with 5 or 6 different examples of the communication.
One thing I would add, and those who are on the call that our employers can add or, you know, give their opinion on this, but one thing that has been a roadblock for my clients in the past has been, we've communicated it to the employees, but the management team doesn't necessarily know how to apply it. So, like, when an injury happens, like, they're not necessarily communicating that to the employee. Like, that's the expectation if you're able to, right? So maybe adding in a bullet point for that, making sure management is on board or aware of how to implement it, that might be a good thing as well.
Excellent point, Stephanie.
Susie, I know years ago when we were fortunate to have the Bureau come visit us up on the Cumberland Plateau. Former Administrator Hudgens suggested to us that we communicate in our onboarding or orientation to our new associates that we had a return to work program for injured workers. And so we've done that ever since. And I feel like it's very helpful to let them know on the front end. And then we also have our intake adjusters mention it again when an injury is called in that we do have a recovery plan with a return to work program for them. So we've tried to get better at communication. It's still a continuous improvement action item for us as a company, but the earlier that communication is made, I think the better.
Great points. Thank you. Any other suggestions on this area?
It may be a good idea if it was shared at the time somebody reported an injury.
That's always been one of our like gold standard recommendations is that, or when they're released to light duty, that they sign an agreement saying, I understand that this is a temporary thing and I'm going to abide by the physician's restrictions and not work outside of those, if that would help to your point.
Thank you, Stephanie.
I think the earlier the better because the injured worker wants to know their employer is on board for to help them throughout the process, and we want you back. You're not going to get fired because you had an accident. And those are the type of things I think that go through an injured worker's head at the initial injury, and we forget that.
So I can speak to that a little bit, being an injured worker myself, and you're absolutely right. So making that contact with a teammate and then reinsuring that teammate, you know, that we're here to help and here to get you back to work. For me, that went a really long way to getting me back to work. So good point.
Well, Travis, let me ask you this, because I'm kind of pie in the sky on some things. When you return to work, if your employer made a deal out of it, you know, just sure everybody know that, hey, you'd come back or congratulating you on coming back, would that have put you like in an awkward position? Or would that have made you feel welcome? Am I making sense here with what I'm trying to describe?
It made me feel welcome. It really did. It made me feel like, you know, that I was needed and wanted and was a part of the team, and that the manager group supported me coming back to work and having that direct contact with the management group, and that support really made a difference.
Thank you.
Good conversation, good tips, everyone. I appreciate it. So let's scroll down. Now we're talking about something that may spark a little more discussion. Maintaining a current pre-injury list of modified or transitional job descriptions. And in our last conversation, we talked about this, but we also talked about maybe they were job duties, not just an entire full-time position. We also talked about the physical job demands being part of that. So some of that, we moved to the application. But again, we've had comments that maybe it's still too burdensome, and we can talk more when we get to the application as to how we want that on there. But for the language in the toolkit, what concerns do you have, or what suggestions do you have for this particular element right here, this criterion?
So I think having an example or a list of examples is probably something that is doable, you know, even if it's a list of half a dozen or a dozen potential roles that exist that someone could perform if injured. And then, you know, the way in my head as I thought about this requirement is you have a brief list of jobs and maybe a notation at the end that, you know, other potential roles or duties may be available on a case-by-case basis. Something like that that you could provide to the physician just to generate ideas for the physician on things that maybe the employee can actually do to get back to work.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Susie. To piggyback on what Justin said, I'm a little concerned about trying to, like, just have this group of modified or transitional job descriptions, because I'm worried that that would cause people just to think inside those job descriptions rather than the nature of the injured worker's injury. So, like, here at Mars, we do everything on a case-by-case basis. We start by, rather than having these job descriptions that are for injured workers that are just over here, now, do we have some things in our mind that people that aren't working at full duty can do? Sure we do. But we literally start by going to the injured workers' area of where they typically work to see if we can modify things that they can do inside their department. And then if there's just nothing that can be done there, then we expand that to different, their line, their, we call them value streams. Then if there's nothing there, we expand it even further. Are there things, in a different department that they could do that's a lot easier than what is in their own department? And then if even going further than that, are there administrative duties that we have up front, you know, filing papers, stuff like that, that the business needs done. So I'm a little, I just feel like if we have a specific, I'm just thinking for us, if my site were to do that, I would think that our managers would have a tendency to pull open those PDAs or the job descriptions and look at them and go, oh, well, none of those fit and be done, rather than to look at every single injured worker on a case-by-case basis, seeing what can we move, shift, adjust to bring them back to work.
That's a great point. So do you think maybe providing an example of what they have done in the past would be good? Or how do you think we can accomplish the goal that we want them to be able to do this without making it too burdensome or limiting, like, a future injured worker because they only have this list and they think they only have to use this list?
Maybe having a second bullet point stating that, I don't know if that'll even work, something along the lines of reviewing every injured worker's capabilities on a case-by-case basis, seeing if there's accommodation that could fit.
Yeah, that's going to be really hard because it's not a one-size-fit-all situation, right? I mean, it's going to depend on the injury, the company, what all processes and processes that company has. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a one-size-fits-all situation.
I agree with
Could
you
Could we
guys.
Not just ask him to provide an example? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would agree with you guys. I think the wording could be addressed that having a dedicated transitional job description or descriptions could be a little overwhelming. I know historically I've been told we're not going to create specific job for transitional duty because then that might not be fair to other people and this, that, the other. I would just be a little bit more specific, or like person from Mars, I'm sorry, I didn't catch her name, was saying about being more task-oriented versus having one specific job or position.
Additionally, on that, when you say you have a job description, just that terminology and the legal aspects, somebody with an ADA accommodation can come in and say, I claim that light duty job. Now it's no longer a transitional duty. It is somebody's job. So I would definitely change that wording to tasks rather than job. Because if you create, if I create a job that's transitional duty, I'm opening it up for somebody to claim it, like in an ADA accommodation.
Thank you. Good, great point.
I work with a lot of construction companies and a lot of different major factories and mills. And every mill and every factory and every construction site is a little bit different. And I'll give you an example with like construction sites. They may find modified duty at one construction site that happens to be their major job right now, that in 6 months from now, it's going to be complete and they're going to have moved on to a different type of job. And once they do that, of course, that what they could have found as a modified duty job or a transitional task job won't be available for that next facility or the next site. So I think I like the idea of saying, you know, give examples of what you have done or provide, you know, one or two examples of how you have provided transitional duty might be the best course versus saying you have done it for everything. And sometimes you have a worker that really it's whether or not you have work available or not, you may have an employer that says, with this particular employee, I'm not sure we need to bring this one back because I see other issues that could be, but they don't, but with other employees, they may be like, no, but that's fine because we've certainly seen where there was some discomfort with, you know, this employee or that for certain reasons.
Thank you, Shirley.
Is being proactive, thinking about what these things are before work injury occurs, is that important?
This is Michelle. I think it's important to identify some of your lighter duty jobs. I don't think there's any harm in that if you're able to get the work demands together to where when you need it, you can use that or modify it. I think that's super helpful. But also, I think the whole thing that I'm hearing and I also agree with is individualizing it. So when you get that injured worker, you might look at their employment application. They may have had some, I always make it up, make it easy. They may have had clerical experience in their background, but they took the job at the factory because it paid better for something. And they may have a skill that you weren't aware of that they could actually use in a light duty capacity that would help your organization. And then also, I think we've talked about in the past, sitting down with them, if you're not sure of what you want to offer them light duty, ask them if they have seen something that they feel needs to be done around the company. Include them in the process, I guess is what I'm saying.
I would agree with that as well. From my experience, it's always best to be proactive about identifying those tasks. It could be a good thing to do when you're regularly updating the job description. So each area, each department identifies a task that you can do where you're lifting less than 5 pounds or one hand at work or this, that, the other, this way, because the time between the injured worker getting to the doctor and the doctor making the decision to write them out of work is pretty short. So knowing those types of things ahead of time may help prevent them unnecessarily getting written out of work instead of assigned light duty tasks.
Yeah, I'll tell you about whenever I'm in a doctor's office, most doctors won't say whether or not they can do a job. Most of the doctors take the position that I'm saying what they can do physically safely. So I rarely even ask if they can do a job. I ask what they can do safely. And because that transitions all through their life, it's not, and I had a little guy today that he was told not to lift over 5 pounds, at work. Well, guess what? He tore out his rotator cuff because he was doing stuff at home. So literally, he only took that restriction to be with at work, and so we're having to repair the rotator cuff again because he doesn't. So these are life restrictions, not necessarily just work restrictions that the doctors are having to address.
I appreciate all the good feedback here. So we need to take a look at this language and probably do some editing here so that here, and we'll talk about this again when we get to the application. I think we'll need to make some changes there as well. If you have suggested language that might work better, feel free to send that to me. I would love to receive that. I think what I'm hearing is it is important to have something in mind so that you are not starting with nothing, no tools, but it's also important that it needs to be individualized and it maybe needs to focus around restrictions to be safest. And so we'll look at that. But again, if you have suggested language, please send that our way. Any other comments on that before we move on to the physician communication? Okay. So the next language element that we want to talk about is establishing a return to work plan with three or more physicians in more than one specialty in advance of placing those physicians on a panel under 50-6-204. Now, what we don't want to encourage, and Jeff tells all of his students in the adjuster certification program, is that we don't want cookie cutter panels. We want those to be individualized as well, but we also think there needs to be some work done in advance, some prep work, as Brian, I think, has called it before there's an injury, so that you are familiar with physicians and the physicians do understand the importance of return to work. So what do you think about this statement? Is there something that we need to change in that? Can we better communicate it differently? What are your thoughts?
I think, what exactly are we asking for employers to do with all of these physicians? Like, how much, what's the level of commitment? What's the level of relationship building? Because, I mean, my initial thought is if you're expecting an employer to go out and establish relationships with multiple physicians and multiple specialties, that could become burdensome if it's maybe go find a couple of primary physicians and specialties that you know you will likely utilize based off your history. That may be doable, but if it's three and multiple specialties, I get that you need to provide a panel, but very often you find your employees will use the same providers due to convenience or reputation, or maybe it's, you know, a recommendation that, hey, this has been someone that another employee has utilized and had great success with. So that's my initial thoughts.
Good question. And Dr. Talmadge, would you mind sharing some of your thoughts? You teach in the Return to Work Coordinator training. You talk about working with physicians and maybe meeting with them up front, or maybe getting to know them. Do you have anything you'd like to add here about what is important with working with physicians in advance?
Susie, I think that depends on the employer. If you have two injuries a year, you're not going to interest physicians in meeting with you when they have a 1 in 3 chance of being picked from the panel. But larger employers who have a significant volume are the ones that you would be perhaps targeting is, yes, you would benefit from the physicians on your panel knowing you, knowing your return to work policy, and you, knowing them.
Okay. Great point.
So I guess my advice for this clause would be make it a little easier for employers who aren't experiencing frequent injuries to make it clear that they don't have to have multiple relationships with multiple specialty physicians. So, for instance, on my job sites, yes, there may be injuries from time to time. That's actually fairly low as well, but direct employees in my company as a general contractor, if we have an injury during the year, that is rare. So it's not going to be feasible for me to set up one-on-one meetings with physicians and multiple specialties and multiple fields, because we're rarely sending anyone off-site for treatment at all, much less to a specialist, if that makes sense. So not that we shouldn't have some relationships existing, but we're going to have fewer than some employers who are sending someone once a week.
Would it be beneficial to differentiate between the initial treatment and the follow-up treatment, where you're maybe getting a little bit more specialized into like ortho or something like that?
Does having an orthopedic specialist and a occupational health physician or a general practitioner, would that be three different specialties? Because that's when kind of putting this draft together, that's what I was thinking. I think if you had a general panel, or if you had an emergency room on there, you know, the specialty would be emergency services. And then you'd also think about having an orthopedic. So maybe I'm off missing the mark on what I'm thinking here.
The problem with orthopedics in Tennessee with just having a panel on orthopedics is the orthos are now subspecialties where they are only treating hands, or they only treat backs, or they only treat knees or shoulders. So you're getting into a real, I mean, they're specializing more and more. You still have a few that will do everything. They just call themselves sports medicine. Honestly, you see that more in the western part of the state. In the east and middle parts of the state, in Tennessee, you see that it is much more specialized. So to say if you're going to have an ortho, you'd have to have numerous different ortho panels. What about, I mean, a lot of the employers, I mean, like, I know the ones that work with me, they just make a phone call and say, hey, who should we put on the panel? And it changes. I mean, because, you know, you can have doctors who, you know, you're going to have to, you may want a general ortho, and, you know, eventually you may be heading for a back, but you want to make sure that the doctors all get along, that you put on those panels. I know that's something not a lot of people think about, but it certainly can be a problem. Is there any way to word it so that either they have a panel, or that they have, like, they utilize a service of some type, whether it be a national service, where their adjuster, you know, has excellent relationships with a case manager or something like that. Is there any way to word it so that maybe, like, some of your medium and your small employers, like a lot of my contractors or my construction companies, they depend heavily on the adjusters and the case managers to develop, or not develop, but to help them figure out who they need to send them to. So I don't know if you could just change the wording so that, you know, either they have a panel, or they have someone who have guidance for a panel, or I don't know exactly how you want to word it, but I think that would be something to consider, because I mean, a lot of employers heavily depend on other people to help them pick the doctors that might be best. And it even comes down to sometimes even personalities of who you think would be able to deal best with some patients. And I'll cite a company I know that probably won't mind is Dillard's. They have a lot of employees that are over 65, like a huge percentage that get injured. And they like to pair them sometimes with physicians who have interest in geriatric patients and also understand the comorbidities that come with patients over a certain age. Just a thought.
It's a great thought. Thank you, Shirley.
This is Dr. Snyder. I think what we're aiming at is that the employer has a plan of how to communicate return to work to the physicians that they use, rather than putting specifics. And maybe you wanted to just say, give us an example of how you were able to communicate your return to work plan to one of your physicians in a recent injury.
Yeah, because the other wrench that gets thrown into that is those employers in the more rural parts of the state. They might not necessarily have the diverse options that somebody in a more metro area would. So maybe complying with the TCA 50-6-204.
Right. That's a good point too, Stephanie. So and that is the next point, providing that panel within 3 days of their report of a work injury and the report of need for medical care. So, and Dr. Snyder, what you were saying, so maybe look at that language and just change it to has a plan for how to communicate your return to work plan with physicians and provide examples and be able to provide examples.
That actually seems a lot more practical to me for employers, having those relationships with the right providers seems really difficult in a lot of circumstances, even for a big employer.
Thank you. Other thoughts on the panels?
Based on what Dr. Snyder said a minute ago about the goal being to make sure that the physicians know that there's a return to work policy with the company, one of the requirements that you mentioned above was that the employer has to communicate that policy with the employees. What if they communicated it with the doctors at the time of the initial visit or something? You know, they either sent the employee with that a copy of the policy, or they sent it there themselves, or they gave it to the adjuster, or the case manager, and they shared it with the treating physician, because some employers, large employers, if they're creating panels that are in the community of the injured worker, they could be doing it in multiple different counties. It would be hard for them to have communications beforehand with physicians that are in multiple counties.
Good thought. Okay. So let's move down and move away from panels, and let's talk about the new revised language here, which we've inserted as be in good standing with the Bureau of Workers' Compensation as determined by the administrator. So that replaced what we had in there about penalties with TOSHA and penalties with the Bureau and penalties that might actually be the fault of the adjuster and not necessarily the employer. So as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, TOSHA has agreed to do research, and we will be doing research. So if we say be in good standing, that does give us a little wiggle room, but what do you all think about that as being in here as a minimum qualification?
I think that's fair. I mean, if someone is not in good standing with the Bureau. I don't know why, you know, they would think that they are even eligible to be on an honor roll.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? So the last part of the language in the draft, of course, is just displaying the posting notice in a conspicuous location in English and Spanish, if applicable. So I don't know if anybody has any concerns with that you want to voice.
I was curious how this would apply to construction sites, and I was wondering if Justin had any insight on that.
I mean, we post all of the required postings at every job site. It is a little more challenging on smaller job sites that have a shorter duration to keep those up and keep those in a prominent location, but it's something that's doable, and many employers are complying with that.
Thank you. Any other questions on the language in the toolkit before we go to the application?
I was wondering if we were missing anything. You know, this is what we kind of came up with inside, but is there anybody on the call think that maybe there's something that we're just completely missing and need to add to it?
One thing I might ask you guys is, what are your thoughts on including something about utilization? So I know a lot of companies will have the policy in place, will say that they're doing it, but they don't necessarily walk the walk, right?
So maybe ask for some names of people that have been returned to work in the past 12 months or something.
Well, I'm thinking about like how on the OSHA log it has like days away or days like utilized in or light duty. I can't remember the exact wording, but like them showing like maybe even submitting like the last couple OSHA logs or summaries. I can't remember which one it's on. But that state that you can clearly see what that they're actually utilizing transitional or return to work program, excuse me.
So kind of comparing the number of injuries versus the number of light duty days versus the number of lost days?
Yeah. Those of you who are employers, I mean, what do you think about that? That's my carrier perspective, but
I agree. I mean, we have to show restricted days with OSHA reporting, days away, restricted, transferred, but restricted is a category, and every year our restricted days are listed.
Is that an aggregate? Do you total some of those, Nancy, or do you do it on an individual claim basis?
On an individual claim basis, just like days lost, and there's days restricted.
That's something that is not, wouldn't be a new stat employers would have to create. It would be something that they'd already have in place if they're following OSHA guidelines.
Correct.
So what proposed language would we want to put in here, or is this something we would want on the application, or both?
Just to kind of initiate the conversation, would you want the number of restricted days to be greater than the number of lost days?
I think that's getting iffy because you don't know the types of injuries that they're having. So if somebody's, you know, hospitalized for 2 months, then obviously they can't return to work. But I think that's all dependent. But I would put a general statement in from my perspective in this, but not, I mean, however you want to gauge that is up to you guys who are going to be reviewing this. But I would just say identifying if they're actually utilizing it or not.
But I mean, also, I don't think you can ask them for names of employees because I think that would be a violation of the privacy of the employee. So that would be my only thing I would say that you can't. I don't think you can do that. I think that would. I wouldn't. If I was an employer position, I wouldn't list out people's names for sure.
I don't think we would need to because we already have that data.
It's the OSHA summary, exactly. 300A summary.
I'm sorry, and what is it again, Nancy?
It's the OSHA 300-A summary, and I haven't posted in my cubicle. That's not what's behind me, but I have like 3 years posted that we use for OSHA safety statistics. Yes. So it's doesn't have names on it. It's the end-of-the-year summary that companies do in their OSHA record keeping and reporting. But the OSHA 300A summary list the days lost, days restricted, and a lot of other information on companies per year. And every employer knows that that's due following January, and we input that to OSHA and report that.
I think it'd be a good idea. It goes back to the walk the walk, right? Are they doing what they say they're going to do? You know, are we? So me, obviously being an injured worker, like I'm always going to look at preventing it, right? So that's where my mind goes when we talk about injured workers and that type stuff. But, you know, this right here is supposed to be the gold standard, right? So if you're going to be the gold standard, you know, we need to go back and look and see what they're doing. And if they have low to no or none previous incidents, I mean, I think it's something to celebrate. But I do agree with Shirley, though. Like, I wouldn't want my name on, you know what I mean?
Great point. Yes, correct. Yes, and I think Dr. Talmadge had already suggested we take the names off the panel examples. If any panel examples are submitted, that we want that redacted as well. For injured workers. So on this general statement, Stephanie, we want to put something in here that they're identifying if they're actually utilizing the return to work program and utilizing the OSHA 300-day summary.
I wouldn't necessarily say you had to utilizing the 300-day summary because Technically speaking, that's required. But I would add something about utilizing the return to work where it were possible, like within restricted due to something like that, because not everything's going to be fall into the light duty category, right? Some people don't have that, and so way down the line, but something about utilizing it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Is there anything else we're missing in the language of minimum qualifications? So if not, let's talk for a few minutes about the application. And this is just a draft. We want your input. We're happy to change it. It's a starting point for us. Okay, so far, and this will be an online application. Kyle has already figured out a way to do this with FormStat where forms can be uploaded with some of the questions, so he has already figured that out for us, so we think it's going to work. But here's what it looks like now. So let's start at the top and see what thoughts you have on here. And I apologize, I'm not sure how I can view the chat. If there are chats coming in, I can't view them while I'm sharing my screen very easily. If there are any questions or comments, could somebody let me know about those, please?
Dr. Curte said he had to step away.
Okay. That's all. Thanks, Brian. Okay, so we talked internally that we know some employers will have multiple we'll have sites in multiple states, but we want to know which Tennessee site is applying for the honor roll, as different Tennessee sites could apply individually. Any thoughts or concerns on that?
Is there a way they can differentiate between one site versus all of their Tennessee sites?
Yeah, yes, I would think we would want them to do that. So how would we do that other than just listing like the city and the address of the particular one? Are you saying that they might want to be able to? Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Maybe attach an addendum. I don't know. Thinking about like on the insurance app, they always have the addendum of their locations. But I mean, some of the larger companies that, like, say, for example, one of my clients was an assisted living organization, and they had, I can't even, probably hundreds of locations across the state. So it's like, are they going to list all of those? Or, like, you know, even in different industries. So if you have, like, retail stores, if you have maybe 20 retail stores, are you applying for all of them or maybe just one? I don't know.
And I think in some of our conversation, we did talk about this would just get filled out for one site at a time. But if there were multiple sites they were trying to apply for at the same time, adding an addendum would be helpful. Okay. All right. So if you're calling in and you're unable to look at the screen, if you want to scroll down on the email that I sent, we're at the first real question, which is, has your return to work program been in effect for at least 12 months? Basic yes or no on that one. And has your return to work policy been communicated to all current employees? And maybe this is where we have not only a yes or no, but the yes, and then if yes, have another drop down, how it was communicated, and provide some examples. But as we talked about earlier, would this be where we would want to do that and have it on the application?
Yeah, Susie, I see kind of a yes, and, you know, check all that apply.
Okay.
Kind of option there, and then maybe another option for people to fill in something else.
Okay.
Or you do the, yeah, I'm sure Chicago could set up some type of drop down where you select one, and then after you select one, another drop down pops up and appears and allows you to keep going to different examples.
Okay. That sounds good. Now, do we want something on there about communicating that? You know, Jeff had mentioned what we're trying to do is communicate initially with some employees, maybe not all specialties, but do we want that on the application or just in the language in the toolkit, or do we want that as part of this that they have communicated once physicians are selected?
I'm sorry, Susie, I didn't follow what you said.
I'm sorry. What I was saying here is we have a yes, no, has your return to work policy been communicated to all current employees? And so we're going to expand on when they hit yes, they'll have another drop down, and then we'll have them upload their return to work policy. When we were talking on the language with communicating with some physicians up front, having some in mind, maybe not all the specialists, as Shirley indicated, there's subspecialties now, so many subspecialties for orthos and such that we wouldn't expect them to have all of that. But would we want them to say something about when they have the, once they have the physician, do we want a question on there that the return to work policy, some type of return to work communication has been communicated to the physicians when the panel is determined?
So you're saying add another question and ask
yes,
about
that's
how the plan is communicated with physicians.
Right.
So would it really be a yes or no question, or are you thinking doing yes or no if they answer yes and then say, how do you do it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Do we need that on the application? And if not, that's fine.
I like what you said about how do you do it. That could be a good way to get some information about how they're developing the relationship with their providers, like a free form field.
Okay. All right. So how did you communicate? Okay. Okay. That sounds good. All right. Are there any concerns about asking if they have designated a return to work coordinator?
It was a requirement on the previous page, so I don't think there should be a problem in asking for it.
Okay. And again, we're asking about the posting notice. Is it displayed in a conspicuous location? And sounds like from some of the employer feedback that that is doable. Correct, Justin?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And then uploading a picture of the posting notice, is that too burdensome?
Shouldn't be.
Unless we're thinking about those multi-locations where they might have hundreds of panels.
Okay. So for one location, maybe, or okay.
I guess for, in my head, the way this works for like a construction office would be each office would be a location. Maybe you guys had something different in mind, but I would think, yeah, an example of the posting notice rather than trying to submit this for like per construction site, which might last 3 months or 6 months.
Good point. Yes. An example. Okay. Now we're down to the panels again, and we talked about this because if we say, please upload the last five panels offered, we initially talked about doing that within the past 12 months, but what if an employer didn't have five injuries in the past 12 months? So if we just say the last five panels offered, is that too broad? Is that something we want them to do?
I would definitely put, I would just make it clear that it's if applicable. You know.
If applicable, okay.
I think five's an awful lot. I think three would be a better number.
Okay. And is it going to be too problematic or burdensome if we do ask them to redact the injured worker's information and just substitute the injury claimed?
That information is reported to us already, so.
So it should
I would agree
be-
with that. I would agree with that. We save everything electronically, so that means that for me to submit this, I would have to print it off, somehow white out the name, write it in as an injury, then rescan it to myself, then forward it to you. So that's a little bit of work. Not that it couldn't be done. It's just like you're only asking for it once, but that's how it would look for me to do it. I would have to print three of them off and make the alterations and scan them back to myself and then submit them.
So what are you suggesting, Jeff, when you were saying we have that information?
Not ask anybody to redact it?
Don't redact it. Any other questions or comments or concerns on the panel examples? Okay, so we'll move down and let's look at the next couple of questions, and I think they're going to need to be revised based on earlier conversation as well. We are looking at simply asking them if they have a list of job positions and or job duties that can accommodate yes or no. And then we ask a follow-up question, do they include physical demands such as weights, measurements, repetition, and frequency? And then we ask them to upload a list. So, and then we also ask to please describe your job accommodation process. So what suggestions and thoughts do you all have on that?
Susie, this is Michelle. Can you say that one more time?
Yes. Okay. So the first question we have is, do you have a list of job positions and or job duties? Well, and there's a typo right in front of me. That can accommodate modified or transitional duty, yes or no? Do those job positions and or job duties include the physical demands such as weights, measurements, repetition, and frequency? Please upload a list of jobs or job duties that can accommodate. And then please describe your accommodation process. So what we talked about earlier, I think Diane pointed out that we would not want a list of positions, as that could be something that someone could come in and claim. So we would want to stick to the words of job duties or job tasks.
Do they even have to be associated with a job? Could they just be a list of tasks or duties that can accommodate? That way it's not tied into this specific job. It could just be tasks or duties.
I was thinking that. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Diane, that's exactly what I was thinking, because we don't have jobs that we can accommodate. That's why we have to refer to nonprofits, because we don't have those. So what we do is, like Shirley mentioned earlier, we rely on the physician to write medical restrictions. And I got one this morning, left arm duty only. And so you have to work with that. And in a perfect world, we could do all that, but the way our business is, we have to be a little bit more creative and have other people help us with return to work. And just getting those medical restrictions is for us the gold standard. And then we have to run with it. So that's just a different perspective.
People can also start to think in terms of departments, like, oh, the maintenance department doesn't have any transitional duty or, excuse me, light duty tasks available, but the office might, or the janitorial site might, or whatever. So thinking in more global terms, company wide, like job tasks or job duty or duties, light duty duties, that's too many duties, but yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Okay, sure. So when we ask if they have those, we're just going to ask if they have the duties, and rather than uplisting a load of those, a list of those, should we be asking for please upload recent or specific examples? Would that be easier? Because if they did accommodate them to apply to a specific injured worker, they might not have been on their list. Are we trying to figure out if they did their prep work and have a list? Are we trying to figure out if they actually accommodated and returned the injured worker and within restrictions?
What if you just had a text box and asked for a narrative of what do you do to accommodate injured workers?
What about, I agree totally with Jeff. What if, and you don't want to leave anybody out. So there may be those employers who have a list, and there may be those employers who do it on a case by case. So what if it said, you know, do you have a list or process, you know, or something like that of tasks or duties that can accommodate modified or transitional work?
Okay.
And then, like Jeff said, just have them describe that. But I do think it's important to leave that question that has to do with the physical demands, such as the weights, measurements, repetition, and frequency.
Well, what do you all think?
I like what Jeff said. And I like keeping it as simple as possible, because when we start getting in too much of the weeds, the employers are going to drop out and they're going to say, this is too much. Okay. I don't, you know, and you know, any other employers on the call, please chime in.
Yeah, I would agree. If it gets to be too intimidating or hard, we may leave.
And Abby, you have your hand up?
Yes. Was just going to ask the question. I think it's really good to keep it very simple and hope that they would give you a narrative that would be very helpful. I just wonder, for your process, is there a possibility that if it were vague or incomplete, that you could follow up with them with a question to get more information about whether or not they really were a good candidate for the honor roll?
It's a great question. I would think that we could, if they are going to apply, we'll have their contact information, and I would think we could make the decision based on when we have all the necessary information. If we don't have it, perhaps we could follow up. Troy, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And I think the main question that I have is, especially for the employers on the call, do you think that the application is too much? Is it too difficult to fill out and provide all this information? I mean, we definitely want folks to participate, but I don't know, you know, from your standpoint, do you think we're asking too much? Given that there's really not, it's not like the drug-free workplace program where there's a, you know, financial benefit and the rebuttable presumption and all of that you get from the drug-free workplace program if there's a positive test. So what I really want to hear what the employers think about that.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much. right? I mean, we should already be thinking about this for the injured worker anyways, right? So for us here at Nucor, like, we already have all this planned out. I mean, it can get a little touchy at times because it's on a case-by-case scenario, right? We don't have a one-size-fits-all for everybody. But I think it is important to have some of those areas in plan for when we do have a teammate that's hurt, that we can let them go work in sales, or we can let them go work in another department that's not in the mill and not where it's hot and we have molten steel. So I think it's something good to think about. And I think if an employer really wants to go after this, they got to earn it, right? So I feel like they should already be looking at some of this.
I completely agree with Travis. But it's about the honor roll. It's about, you know, the gold standard. So at least, you know, if it can help us reach to a goal to have a very good return to work program, that's what it's about.
I agree. And Travis, your feedback is wonderful today, and I think it helps us to get back to what this is all about, and that is helping employers return injured workers back to work. And I know there's a lot more success stories out there in other employers, and I just really want to reach them and say, tell us your story.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I can help.
All right. We have less than 10 minutes left. I don't want to keep you all over, but I do want to ask one of the other areas I would like a little feedback on, and if we don't have time today, you can email me on this, is our, you know, when Troy asked if this is too much, we hadn't gotten to the end of the application, so maybe it is too much, but we are asking how they track their return to work program and its success, and we're asking, should we even be asking this? Does it matter what percentage of injured workers return to work? Is that something we should be asking? And then we ask them why they feel their program has earned recognition. And then one of the two questions that maybe have stirred some debate internally are, we're asking them to sign that these applications, that the information they're providing is accurate and true. And one of the questions on the application is, are you operating in compliance with state, local, and federal laws? So that if they say yes, they've signed it and said they are. But then we're asking them to disclose any potential penalty violations in the past 12 months. Since TOSHA has agreed to do their research, we'll do our research. Do we even need that question? Is that something we should ask?
I think it might make your job easier if they go ahead and admit that they do have an issue.
Okay, so leave it on there for them to disclose. Okay.
Susie, as far as tracking the success of a return to work program and asking the employers for that, I think it would be a really good idea to offer suggestions on how to show that your return to work program is successful, if that makes any sense, unless the Bureau is trying to figure out ways to show that a program is successful, to gather more, more ways of measuring that. But I think, for somebody who is reaching for gold standard and to implement this program, and like Abby said, is to encourage other employers. I don't think we're going to meet this already knowing how to show our success. I think it might be key for the reward program to say, here's how to do it. And then once you do it, you become this honor roll employer, then here's how you show your business that it's successful. Here's how you show your stakeholders that that what you've done is successful. Here's how you show your return on investment. Just a thought.
Thank you. No, it's great. Great thought. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So if you have other thoughts or suggestions or ideas on this section, on any part of the application or the language, please email me or reach out. I really want this to be right and want it to be correct, and we want to have employers apply, but we want them to be doing it really well if we're going to give them this designation. So please contact me and let me know. I have a suggested date for the next meeting in July, and I'm hoping by then maybe we might even communicate by email before then to see if we have more of a final draft, but we'll see. So before I pull up or we talk about, I think it's July 18th is when I put on the agenda. Does that work for everyone for the next possible meeting? If you have a problem, let me know if that date does not work, but we may follow up then. Of course, it will be virtual as well. And I was asked for an update on the Certified Physician Program, and I believe Dr. Snyder or Jay have agreed to provide that to us today. So if you all could provide that, I would appreciate it.
The Certified Physician Program required some legislative action. It's been passed by both houses of the legislature, but at this point we do not have the governor's signature. Once that's obtained, then the rules will go back to the Attorney General's office for their final approval. So we hope that since it has passed the legislature, that the major hurdle is finished. We're just waiting for some local some other minor things to occur before we can reintroduce or re-energize the program.
Thank you, Dr. Snyder. And Brian gave us a little bit of an update about the return to work coordinator training, where he mentioned it, maybe not an update. Brian, do you have any update to add on the return to work coordinator training program? Mm-hmm.
Next Wednesday will be the last class for our current session, and Mary and I this morning were discussing available dates for the next session, looking at late May, early June to get it started and to try to wrap it up before September.
Thank you. The next reward, employer reward meeting for our employers will be the in-person one. That will be at the conference on June 14th at 9:45 a.m. at the Embassy Suites in Murfreesboro. And you don't have to register for the conference to attend the free brunch for employers. And our speaker will be Deborah Livingston with Reemployability. So that program we have planned. As far as programs beyond that, I'm open to suggestions for our speakers. We need two more virtual meetings for this year. So if you have any additional suggestions, please let me know what those are. And we can talk more maybe at the next meeting about promoting reward again. But I'd really like to have the honor roll wrapped up, because I think that's a huge piece of it. Waiting on the CPP to be approved as well by the Attorney General is another huge piece of the reward program. So when all of those pieces come together, I think we need to do some sort of promotional blitz of reward. And it does look like I did put July 18th at 1 Central Time. If that doesn't work for someone, please let me know. Otherwise, I will send out an invitation for that meeting. I just appreciate everybody's time, everyone's feedback, and thank you so much. This is so helpful. Appreciate everyone.
Susie, bye, everyone. Thanks so
thank
much
you,
for
everybody.
All your work that you've done.
Thank you.
I don't know how many versions of those forms that have been circulated internally, so it's good to get some external feedback, and you've really done a great job. I appreciate all your hard work and everybody that's been involved.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Thanks, Troy.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.